Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and shine a light on the path ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address problems instead of just defending positions. We have another purpose as well, and that is to provide a context at a time when content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. Our show today is about enlightened capitalism, and no, that is not an oxymoron, according to today's guest. At the same time, we have to acknowledge that unenlightened capitalism has been allowed to run rampant, and people are starting to notice, particularly young people. Last October, an astounding public opinion poll came out that indicated that one-third of millennials identified as socialists. Could this be seen as a sign that capitalism, as it has been practiced, has failed us? Thanks to a meme cultivated by economist Milton Friedman over 40 years ago, there's a belief that the only purpose of a corporation is to make profit for its shareholders. And of course, since Citizens United Supreme Court decision 9 years ago, pretty much exactly to the day, it seems that corporations have taken upon themselves the right to extract and exploit in perpetuity and send the cleaning bill to future generations. Could it be that this form of extractor capitalism, what Naomi Klein calls disaster capitalism, is not only obsolete, but it's obsolethal, in other words, deadly as well? Can capitalism not just be reformed, but reformulated? Can it evolve, or will it die, possibly taking Western civilization along with it? Well, our guest today, John Montgomery, is a champion of a new form of enlightened capitalism called the B Corporation. B standing for benefit, as in benefiting the world at large and not just the shareholders at small. An attorney in practice for 35 years, John founded a successful Silicon Valley law firm, now called Montgomery and Hanson LLP, in 2003, and was previously a partner or attorney at prominent Bay Area law firms. In recent years, he's been working with socially and environmentally oriented entrepreneurs to design new forms of corporate governance to add conscience and consciousness above and beyond just the profit. He was the co-chair of the legal working group behind California's benefit corporation legislation, which became law in 2012, and was a California Bar Association magazine Lawyer of the Year, and he also won the B Lab MVP and Champion Awards for this work. He's since become a leading authority on benefit corporations. He's the president-elect of the Benefit Company Bar Association, serves on the advisory boards of B Lab Europe, the Purpose of Corporation Project, and several benefit corporations. John's work as an international advocate for the benefit corporation and the emergent impact economy, we'll talk more about that, inspired him to incorporate Lex Ultima in 2017. Welcome, John.
Hello, Steve. Thank you for having me on your show.
A pleasure. You're on a mission, apparently, not just to reform, but to transform corporations. So why don't you fill us in a little bit on the background, what corporations have historically been, what they are now, and what, in your vision, they need to become?
Well, corporations have served us generally pretty well over the last 500 years, but the challenge is that the basic corporate form that we know and love is just that. It's 500 years old. It really hasn't changed very much from the age of empire. The original corporations were created by kings of Europe to conquer foreign territories and exploit them for the benefit of the royal treasury. And that's what corporations do best. They conquer markets and exploit the heck out of them. And the hidden architecture of that model is that the corporation is just that, a body, corpus. It comes from the Latin word corpus. There's no intelligence baked into the corporation. It's designed to do one thing, conquer markets and exploit the hell out of them. And in modern capitalism, we've normalized the codicil of that. And you mentioned in your introduction Milton Friedman and the notion that corporations exist solely to maximize profit for shareholders. Well, there's a codicil to that maxim, which is that it's morally acceptable for corporations to externalize as many of the negative consequences of their behavior onto society and the environment. And that's really the core sponsoring belief of the corporation. So we have these collective life forms that are very, very powerful, and at their core in the boardroom, their moral compass is maximize profit for shareholders at the expense of society and the environment. And that's the moral compass that guides multinational corporations globally. That's the system that we've got today.
Well, that compass is actually not so much pointing north as it's helping things kind of go south. So how is your work? How is the B Corporation a way of transforming this form that needs to be not just reformed but reformulated?
Well, the current version of the corporation has a very primitive conscience function. The directors of a corporation have a fiduciary responsibility to take care of the interests of the shareholders. There's only one problem with that. Corporations are multiplicities. They are composites of multiple stakeholders. They have employees, vendors and suppliers, customers, communities in which they do business, ultimately the environment. And the conscience function of the current form of corporation only extends to shareholders. With the benefit corporation and consequently the current form of corporation is prone to antisocial or at its worst sociopathic behavior. And we've normalized that. The benefit corporation begins to reverse the inherent lobotomy of the corporation by beginning to endow it with a more comprehensive social and environmental conscience. Because a benefit corporation not only optimizes profit for shareholders as usual, but it also must provide a material positive impact on society and the environment from its operations, taken as a whole, measured against a third-party standard, and reported annually to shareholders and the public. So what that short phrase that I just cited does is it begins to endow the corporation with a comprehensive social and environmental conscience that transcends and includes the normal pecuniary one, that begins to make the corporation prone to altruistic behavior rather than sociopathic or antisocial behavior.
Very, very interesting. And I'm just wondering how I would imagine that certain startup companies want to be B Corps right away, but have there been companies that are already in existence who decided that they want to adopt this higher level of operation?
Well, there are a lot of existing corporations, conventional corporations, traditional corporations, however you want to describe them, that have leaders that are socially and environmentally inclined. And they have been running their businesses with a social and environmental conscience. When they hear about the benefit corporation, such as when Yvon Chouinard of Patagonia did back in 2011 or so, they are very excited because all of a sudden there's a corporate form that's in alignment with their values. And the fiduciary responsibilities of them as directors align also with their values. And the dissonance that those who have broad social and environmental values in addition to monetary ones feel in a conventional corporation is that the fiduciary duties flow only to stockholders. So you get corporate behavior that's often out of alignment with one's personal value system. In other words, the corporation adheres to the rule of gold, while most individuals that are on boards and are officers of corporations are good people, and they follow the golden rule in their private lives. And when we go into these corporate entities, we often feel a massive amount of cognitive dissonance between our personal values and the Judeo-Christian tradition of, you know, living by the golden rule, and the core value inherent in a corporation, which is the rule of gold, maximize profit for shareholders at the expense of society and the environment.
Exactly. Well, of course, the Swami would say that the rule of gold is do unto others before they can do unto you. And unfortunately, that's been operative. I really like your new organization called Lex Ultima, and I never really mastered Latin. I did Pig Latin as a kid, but I never mastered actual Latin. What does Lex Ultima mean? And tell us about this entity.
Well, there's several layers of meaning in Lex Ultima. So I'm a fan of developmental theory, and one of my favorite developmental theorists is psychiatrist David Hawkins. And in his work, one of my favorite quotes is, "Love is the ultimate law of the universe." And one of the things that I observed as a corporate lawyer representing about 1,000 startups is leaders who led from the heart had a fair competitive advantage over the vast majority of leaders who lead using fear. And I witnessed in my startup companies that love is a far better operating system than fear. Unfortunately, the powers that be are terrified of the L word. And so I wanted to make love at the front and center of my new business, because I've one of the two takeaways of my 35-year career is that I witnessed love truly is a far better operating system than fear, and it runs circles around the traditional way of managing people. So by alluding to love is the ultimate law of the universe, that's what Lex Ultima means. It's Latin for the ultimate law. And then the other piece is, I've threatened to quit being a lawyer almost since I became one. I've tried to get out of the profession many, many times, and it keeps giving me more damn opportunities for personal growth. So Lex Ultima is kind of a personal pun for me, that this damn well better be my last law firm. So
I get it. I love it. And by the way, I didn't get the inference that at Lex Ultima, the ultimate law of the universe is love. And I really appreciate you You know, it's funny you talk about that because years ago, almost 20 years ago, I had the opportunity to present and perform in front of a group, believe it or not, called the Holistic Lawyers Association. And there was a conference in the Florida Keys. And, of course, doing comedy, I was expected to be funny. And I came up there. I said, wow, a room full of 250 holistic lawyers, you make up for all the assaholistic ones out there. So
that's awesome.
But it was very heartening to, and I'm still in touch with many of those people. So it was very heartening to recognize that there are people taking a stand for that ultimate law, that the golden rule, as you said, overruling the rule of gold. This particular entity, Lex Ultima, what does this company do?
Well, we sort of do two things. The two things that I learned in my legal career were that the corporation, as we know and love it, is 500 years old and it desperately needs an upgrade because it's the way it's constructed. It doesn't have a conscience, or it has a very primitive one, and it's prone to sociopathic behavior. So hence my work with the Benefit Corporation. The other thing I observed was that my founders, who led from the heart, had a competitive advantage over the vast majority of entrepreneurs and business leaders who lead using fear. And the neuroscience and the evolutionary biology, developmental theory, all confirm that love is a far better operating system than fear. You know, Gallup will tell you that 70% of American workers are not engaged at work. And of those 70%, 30 of those 70 are actively looking for a job at any one time. And 20 of those 70 are sabotaging or harming their employer. So we have a crisis of meaning in the United States because workers are not engaged. They're going through the motions at work. They're working for a paycheck, but ultimately that doesn't provide them with enough meaning. Getting out of bed every morning to go to work for a collective life form that exists solely to maximize profit for shareholders isn't really terribly motivating. And I think I've got a 30-year-old son and a 27-year-old daughter, and I've watched them and their friends vote with their feet. They're not as interested as my generation was going to work for corporations that exist solely to maximize profit for their shareholders. That just doesn't provide enough meaning. So Lex Ultima basically helps leaders lead from the heart. So I do a fair amount of executive coaching and that kind of thing. And then I help corporations design benefit corporation governance architecture and make the journey from being a conventional corporation into a benefit corporation.
Well, great. We're going to take a little break, John, and we'll be back and we'll talk more about this leading from the heart. This is Steve Behrman. I'm with WikiPolitiki. We're talking to John Montgomery about the B Corporation. We'll be back after these messages.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Steve Behrman. We're back with our guest, John Montgomery. We're talking about the B Corporations, and we're also talking about how the power of leading with love. You know, you're talking about dissatisfied and even sabotaging workers. Years ago, I lived in Michigan. I taught auto workers as part of the weekend college at Wayne State University. And what I found was this overwhelming sense of frustration that they often had really good solutions. They had ways of solving problems on the assembly lines, et cetera, and they felt consistently not listened to. They felt discounted. And consequently, there was a sense of we versus they, and there often was this sense of if not outright sabotage, then certainly sabotage by disinterest. How did you come to discover this, the leading by love, in the course of your work over those years?
Well, as a startup company lawyer, I had about 1,000 startups, and I had about a dozen of those that were grand slam home runs. They were magical. And in the middle of reading Jim Collins' Good to Great in 2002, mm-hmm. where Jim saw a pattern in companies that went from good to great, and these were public companies, I suddenly had an epiphany. I realized, holy cow, the dozen or so really super successful companies that I've worked with had a common developmental pattern. And I started my law firm in 2003 on the belief that I had uncovered this developmental pattern that was the secret to success, and that if we designed a corporate boutique as an incubator, gave our clients reduced rates and took a little bit of equity in exchange, we would do very well over the long term. And there was only one little problem with my thesis. I only understood about 20% of the magic behind this common developmental pattern. And that led me deep into social neuroscience, evolutionary biology, the science of consciousness, the science of mind, developmental theory, et cetera. to really go deep and reverse engineer what had actually happened in these companies. And, you know, to make a very long story short, as Paul Zak at Claremont McKenna and other neuroscientists started doing their work showing that, you know, when we human beings work in environments where we're loved and trusted, guess what? We're twice as happy, we're twice as productive, and we have twice the job tenure. You know, in other words, we have half the employee turnover because mm-hmm. we've got happy, satisfied people. So I spent about a decade getting deep into the science and the emerging science about how consciousness works in our collective life forms. And it's really very simple, Steve. We have essentially two speeds. We're either love-based or we're fear-based. And the vast majority of us have not figured out how to cease being victimized by our limbic system. You know, we're predated creatures. We don't have claws. We don't have fangs. We're kind of like horses. And we survived from an evolutionary biology perspective by banding together in tribal units. And in our brains, we've got three types of social neurons that connect us together. Whenever we go into a group, and this includes corporations, our brains scan the group. In a few nanoseconds, we deduce who the leader is. We determine their values, their behavioral norms, their mood, and most importantly, we literally entrain our consciousness to the field of consciousness that they're emanating. And guess what? About 99% of business leaders, in my experience, run on fear. And so mm-hmm. the field of consciousness of the collective life form or the tribal unit from an evolutionary biology perspective that these leaders are emanating is fear-based. And the neuroscience shows that such environments, you know, people are half as happy, half as productive, and last half as long as in regular environments. So if you lead from the heart, you get half the employee turnover because you got happy employees. And if you do it right, guess what? You create the environment for a collective flow state, which is endemic of peak human performance. You get creativity, collaboration, cooperation, and you literally create invisible neural networks that allow human beings to function as one. And with my most successful startups, you could literally walk into the lobby and you could feel the electricity. You could feel the buzz. And that's really what got my attention was, whoa, what is going on in these companies? And the people that were in them thought, oh, it's just luck. You know, we've got the right product and the right place and the right time and the right VCs. And, you know, it's just luck. But I had enough of these companies where I realized, wait a second, there's something phenomenal happening here. These startups have a collective flow state going. And if I can figure out how to reverse engineer how they created that collective flow state, we can vastly improve the quality of the collective life forms and startups that we create. So that's really how I got going.
Well, I'm very curious as to how let's imagine that you're called in as a consultant, either on a new company or one that's been ongoing, and you have to assume that the leader wants to make the shift. Certainly you make a shift to offer more benefit than simply the bottom line. What is the process like of coaching somebody out of this fear-based mindset into a love-based heart set?
Well, and this is where the developmental theory comes in. I try to meet people where they are. And a lot of executives already have mindfulness practices or the equivalent. You know, for example, mm-hmm. I have an executive who is, you know, a black belt in a martial art, and he's been a practitioner for decades, and it's quite good. And you don't get to be a black belt if you're not present and if you're not able to manage your limbic system. And so for somebody like that who already has figured out how to be present, how not to be victimized by the limbic system, how to be in the present moment, making object the evolutionary biology and the social neurology of tribes and how all this sort of stuff works, often it's just for them it's just a matter of connecting the dots. In a sense, I'm holding up a mirror. I'm basically saying, look, you probably ought to know the hidden dynamics of leadership that are going on all the time, because everything you do is a leadership communication. And a lot of people that are ready for this conversation intuitively know this stuff. And all I'm doing is pointing out to them and making it object what they're already intuitively doing and what they already intuitively know. And all of this stuff is endemic to all of us. We all have this evolutionary biology, the social neurology hardwired into us, and it operates automatically wherever we go, in our family, in our workplace, everywhere. And so I tend to work best with leaders that, you know, have a mindfulness practice, are super disciplined, they're practice martial arts, so they have a very good foundation. And they're generally not victimized by fear. That's really fear is our friend. It's telling us some valuable information. But if we're victimized by it, we allow our limbic system to take over. We're no longer present. We become run by defensive behavior patterns, and we're gone. You know, the next thing you know, we're yelling at our coworker or whatever, and you know we're no longer present. So those are the leaders that are ripe for these conversations.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that you've come in where somebody might want that, but they don't have that. They haven't cultivated. And I would say that some people have had the practices to cultivate what you call mindfulness and discipline and giving yourself over to something that's bigger than you. Have you had the experience of taking somebody from, let's say, a more fear-based space to something where they've been able to open up to being a different kind of leader?
Yeah. In executive coaching, executives are often sent to an executive coach because they're doing great, but they need more quote unquote executive presence. And the company that they work for doesn't really know how to help somebody cultivate executive presence, but they know when somebody has it and when somebody doesn't. And so a lot of the time the coach is expected to somehow magically give this person executive presence. So I will often use that as the starting point to gently bring an executive on that journey of self-awareness and self-actualization. And the first thing I often do is start with the science, the evolutionary biology of tribes, and make the executive acutely aware that absolutely everything they do is a leadership communication, especially with the group that they're responsible for. Mm-hmm. And if you have a group of 25 people that are working for you and you're in a bad mood, you've just had a fight with your wife, you backed your car out of the driveway and ran over your cat, and you arrive, in a mess at the office, guess what? The 25 people on your team, they can tell instantly when you walk in the door. The social neurons do the job in nanoseconds. And they go, oh, boss is not here today. He's pissed off. Avoid him. And, you know, that team is not going to be very productive that day. So the first lesson I try to impart is that everything we do matters. How we show up really matters, because we can't fool the evolutionary biology and social neurology in our brains. And if we're in a bad place, guess what? Everybody on your team knows it, and they're not going to be very productive. And you're going to have, you know, the collective mood of that place is going to reflect the bosses. So
yeah, it's funny. I totally get that. My wife years ago when she first started working worked at this health food store, and the woman who ran it, every Tuesday, let's say, she believed that she needed to fast one day a week. And so every Tuesday she would fast, and her blood sugar drop was so severe that she was a tyrant, and totally not in charge of her own presence. And everybody knew that Tuesday was the day to get fired. Tuesday was the day to avoid the boss. You know, and on Wednesday she was like back to normal. But you know, you didn't actually need to have your neurons tell you that. It was obvious from all of these interactions. I'm really enjoying this. We're going to take a short break in a minute, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about how the B Corporation shows up in society. I also want to talk about, maybe we can start on this, you mentioned David Hawkins, and I love the distinction in his book title, Power versus Force. And so I'm definitely interested in hearing your take on power versus force when we return with John Montgomery. Steve Behrman, this is Wiki Politiki.
Mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org, brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, Steve Behrman. I'm back with our guest, John Montgomery, on WikiPolitiki. John, power versus force. Did you find that compelling?
Oh, absolutely. I devoured that book, and then I have subsequently devoured all of David Hawkins' other works, and I frequently drive around listening to some of his books on tape. I found his career was incredibly inspiring for me.
Mm-hmm. And again, it does sound like that when we're in fear and we're not in that harmony, then we tend to equate power with force. And it's the difference between magnetics and pushing against something. So I can see where the natural leaders that you're talking about are people who can cultivate that. Recognize that they're not going to force people to do things, that somehow there has to be they have to come along as part of an agreement, as part of a field moving together. Anything else on that?
Well, I mean, this is what happened in my most successful startup companies and what I tried to replicate in my law firm. So when I what I witnessed was with these dozen or so startups that I profile in a book was that they essentially triggered the law of attraction. They created irresistible attractor patterns so that employees wanted to work for them, investors wanted to invest in them, customers wanted to buy for them, cities wanted them to put their headquarters in their town. And they basically were unstoppable. And when I set the law firm up, I mean, again, I only knew about 20% of what I understood about how to actually design a business from the get-go consciously to trigger the law of attraction. And when you when you operate from the heart, guess what? We're hardwired to gravitate towards leaders that lead from the heart. It just plain feels better. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a business where that's operating from the heart, guess what? People feel it. And they want to do business with you. They want to be part of the tribe. They want to be part of that field of consciousness because it feels good. So, yeah, power versus force was very, very influential to my work, and what I try to do with my clients, both corporate and executive coaching, to the extent that they're ready to hear this stuff and it doesn't seem too woo-woo or new age to them, is basically turn them on to essentially what's the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. And when you operate from the heart, the more in tune you are, the more the universe responds to you and responds with abundance. That's been my experience.
I think that's true. And obviously the law of attraction, the flip side is the law of repulsion, which operates the opposite way and repels things when it's repulsive. Getting back to the B Corps, how does this manifest in terms of accountability? Is there a different accountabilities for B corporations, and how are those manifested and measured?
Yeah, there is a different accountability, and I'm going to make your audience an expert in the benefit corporation. We've already talked about the fiduciary duties in benefit corporations and how they flow to all of the corporation stakeholders, not just shareholders as in a conventional corporation. So that's one fundamental difference. There are three others. The first is a benefit corporation has a general public purpose. It's got to create general public benefit by providing a material positive impact on society and the environment. So that's the public benefit piece or the general public purpose piece. Then there's the accountability piece, where you've got to measure how well you're doing creating a positive environmental and social impact against a independent third-party standard. And then you have a transparency element where you have to report to your shareholders annually and the public annually about how well you're doing. You got to give them a benefit report every year. So those are sort of the four key elements. And every benefit corporation has to provide a benefit report. Mm-hmm. And when we got the legislation passed in California, we had to make a lot of compromises. And one of the things that we did was keep the legislation simple. We wanted to make it ridiculously easy to use and understand so that people would adopt the legislation. And there was a lot of fear among the corporate community, and in particular the corporate bar, about this new corporate form. And these lawyers were generally terrified of liability and monetary exposure and so on and so forth. So in order to get the legislation passed, we had to make it safe for the user. So there are no monetary penalties. There's no penalties of any kind for failing to publish a benefit report. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, a shareholder can go to a benefit corporation and sue it basically for injunctive relief to get the benefit corporation to produce a report. But there's no penalty for failing to provide the transparency and accountability piece. So unfortunately, that's probably one of the biggest challenges of the benefit corporation, is that probably less than 50% of benefit corporations actually follow through with the accountability piece, i.e. measuring their performance against the third-party standard, and the transparency piece, reporting annually to the public.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, they begin with an intention, and then this is only my imagination, is that life happens, business happens, and those things kind of get, second or third priority rather than
well,
first
especially in cases where you can go to Patagonia's website, for example, and see their annual benefit reports, and they're beautiful. They're works of art, and they that company lives and breathes sustainability and trying to be a more regenerative and sustainable enterprise. So mm-hmm. for them, it's no additional effort to create a benefit report, and in fact, it gives them another vehicle to tell their exciting story. North Coast Brewing, same thing, up in Fort Bragg. They produce a beautiful annual benefit report. It's very, very inspiring. But for businesses that are on the margin, where you may have a founder that wanted, like in my law firm, I was the prime mover in our becoming a benefit corp, or a B corp rather, but none of my partners were really enthusiastic about it. And so that's often true, where a founder or a couple of executives are all on board with benefit corporations and B corps, but maybe the venture capitalists on the board are not, or the other executives are not, or they don't understand it. And so the preparation of that annual benefit report just doesn't happen. It's like there's a requirement for corporations to hold an annual meeting of shareholders, but in my experience as a startup lawyer, very few startups ever bother to hold the annual meeting. And mm-hmm. the benefit report is sort of treated the same way, with the 50% or so that don't get around to preparing the report, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So obviously, it's sort of a standard and intention to give corporations and the public an opportunity to to transform the value system. What do you see as the most encouraging signs right now that there is a we will call an upwising, where people are wising up and so on, of this shift having an impact?
Well, the first benefit corporation law came out in 2010. There are now about 8,000 benefit entities in the United States. 34 states have adopted benefit corporation legislation. Italy adopted the Società benefit in 2017. Colombia adopted a similar benefit corporation law last year. There are 12 countries around the world that are considering benefit corporation-like legislation. And we have public companies that have adopted the form. There was the first IPO of a public benefit corporation a couple of years ago, Laureate Education. We've got Amalgamated Bank, is a certified B Corp. They went public last year. So we have, you know, major investment banks like BlackRock encouraging and admonishing businesses to develop social responsibility. And mm-hmm. you know, if you look at Larry Fink's letter to CEOs last year, I mean, he was pretty clear that business has a moral responsibility to step up and exercise more social responsibility.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things you mentioned earlier that I think has been really a very important way that corporations have not shown up has to do with externalization of costs, externalization of waste products, et cetera, et cetera. How have the better operating B Corps been able to deal with this externalization issue?
Well, it's a really tough one, because you get into the entire supply chain, and mm-hmm. I think Patagonia has done a really good job being honest about how difficult it is to create a business that is truly regenerative and has cradle to cradle manufacturing, where you mm-hmm. you basically make stuff and recycle it and remake it into new stuff, minimizing waste and environmental consequences. It's really, really tough because the entire global economic system is like that movie The Matrix. You know, it's a matrix. And embedded in the matrix is that maxim that the corporation exists solely to maximize profit for shareholders, and that it's morally acceptable to foist the negative consequences of corporate behavior onto society and the environment. And we've normalized that. You know, we drive cars that spew CO2 into the air. Globally, I think we're putting out 100 million tons of CO2 a day, something like that. I mean, it's just astounding. And, we've normalized a system that does that. And so a company like Patagonia can reform its supply chain and make sure that the products that it's sourcing are done, you know, with fair labor practices and with minimal environmental consequences and maximum recycling and reuses of products and everything else. But they are embedded in the matrix. And mm-hmm. part of what is happening globally, you know, I've been in the legal silo and peripherally in the, you know, executive coaching leadership silo. But there are people working all around the world on parts of the infrastructure of a new economic matrix, because it's very, very hard to operate sustainably and regeneratively in a unsustainable, unregenerative global context, because we've got a global market that has bought into, you know, Milton Friedman's maxim as its operating system. Mm-hmm. And essentially we need to change the sponsoring thoughts of the system. And the best way to do that is to create an alternative matrix so that people have a clear choice. Just as the Western economies had after World War II, Western Europe was devastated, and there was a choice between American capitalism, Milton Friedman and the Chicago School, the Mont Pelerin Society, and state-run Soviet planned, centrally planned economic systems. And American capitalism simply threw a better party. And what we need to do now is design an alternative economic system that's an alternative to the current matrix and make the choice very, very clear so that people can choose. Do you want a fear-based system or do you want a love-based system? Do you want to lead from the heart or do you want to lead with fear? Do you want to do business in businesses that are prone to sociopathic and antisocial behavior, or do you want to be a good global citizen and operate in an entity that's prone to altruistic behavior? So we've got to design a new alternative system, and that I'm part of hundreds and thousands of people around the world that are co-creating this new system, and that's what's got to happen.
Well, thank you, John Montgomery, and hopefully consumers will make their choices based on supporting this new system. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki. I'll be back next week. Thank you once again, John Montgomery.
Oh, you're very welcome, Steve. Thanks for having me on your show.
Sure.